malanga, those cards, they must be in pilot in Haiti. That's a pilot project for the select committee. We start in where? In Mpumalanga and Limpopo. I'm lobbying.
Okay.
Instructions. That are instructions on our group.
I'm Herman Groenewald, member of this committee, and I represent the Northwest province.
I'm O'Neill De Beer, a member of the committee, and I'm from the Western Cape.
I do this on behalf of my whip. She is Lebuhani Mabinja, representing Mpumalanga. She's still twin.
Other members will join us late.
Gigi, can you introduce your team and we'll just zoom into the business of the day?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Jimimani, starting myself, Gigi Labour. There's a lot of us here. I think I'll ask people to quickly say who they are. Starting with Monica here. Yeah? Monica.
I'm Monica Lucian.
I'm going to go to the department. I'm going to go to the
department. I'm going Deputy
Director
General,
Mr.
Delivery.
Tobi
Lelamati, Chief Inspector.
Senator Toba, DDG, Public Employment Service.
Behima Duna, Chief Financial Officer.
Penning Dune, Executive Manager in the DG's Office.
Ngatulim Pasha, Acting Director General of Corporate Services. Mr. Chairman.
And Gigi Mkhono, Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Okay, and he crossed the floor, I can see that. He's jumping back. Thank you very much for the introduction. I had Gigi. Three acting. That's part of your question. Three acting. For how long and until when? And the other one, leading. You've got one female in the delegation. Or two. Well, because this one is from the province. Yeah, it's three. I think two from the department, isn't it?
Yes. You mean from...
Penny from Lesina.
Yes.
John Davis from Lesina.
Yes.
And Sylvian from the province. So the delegation is not... you'll talk to it. Thank you. Okay, DG, over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and I must say as well, I must thank you very much for your timeous notice. Your notice was very timeous, and we must immediately apologize for not responding timeously with the presentation. And I don't make excuses. Next time we will be much more organized. Sincere apologies on that. Maybe let's just start with the questions before, so that we clear the mind, so that we can go into the presentation. The issue of the gender representation is a very serious issue for the department, Chair. We have already, people know that with the corporate services, with all the DDG positions that are open, they are just earmarked for women. Right now, we've already made an appointment for the COO, it's a woman. And I told all the men that they should not even bother applying, and they didn't apply. So we got a woman appointed there. And even for the acting COO position, the reason we did not appoint is because a lot of the cities that had come through, most of them were largely men. and we had made a strategic decision that it's going to be a woman. So we are now on the process of headhunting. With no time, we should close that gap as well. So I just want to say, Chair, it's a serious issue for us, and we are acting on it. So we should be able to look good this year sometime when it comes. Thank you.
Hey, can I
start?
When will everything be
done?
Okay.
Thank you. I haven't got a problem to appoint a woman at all. I think we've got a policy in South Africa around that. But at the end of the day, we must see that, that when we do this appointing of people, that they have the necessary skills. So it doesn't matter to just put a woman in and she can't do the job. So it must be skilled people to the benefit of everyone.
Okay, don't come on.
I heard the DG saying this is, yes, for the correct, for the right decision. So we shouldn't have asked that question. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Chair. On note, on the honorable member, indeed, who are very serious about making sure it's properly skilled people. Right, I think, Penny, I think, colleagues, can I just make sure that I have a line of sight to Penny? Right. Okay. We can proceed just on the first one. I think just like just sitting in the right place, but we just put it there quickly, just for members to see. We'll talk to it just now, just to show you when we talk about green cars in the presentation. That's the kind of those are the kinds of cars that are already registered. The branding process is there. They are already. It's not theory anymore. They are physically there. They've been serviced and everything. By just putting in that branding, and they look very nice. We also have 4x4s as well. The whole issue here is about visibility, but we'll talk to it again. But it's about visibility. We also want to also deal with the issue of access to farms, that we must be clearly identifiable as government officials visiting farms, so that we can make unannounced visits in farms. Now, if we just show up there with your BMW, the farmer doesn't know whether you are the thug or what is going on. So this kind of that kind of branding, we hope is going to make it very clear that it's a government car, and therefore access should be enhanced. So that's really what we're doing, also to make sure that our visibility is enhanced. Chairperson, this is the kind of program that, if we looked at your letter, that you said we should address, that we should come and talk to you about. those kinds of things, their progress, what are our constraints, what are we doing to correct those, what are we doing financially, what are the challenges, and you ask a very important question in terms of what assistance can the Steering Committee give us. These are the key service delivery interfaces of the department. These are the point of, at the point of interaction, the public knows us as the employment services organization, and we'll talk to what that means, and also as an organization that must enforce the law, so inspection and enforcement services. In our presentation, self-copies, but just change it to interfaces as well. Now, the department, and I'll do this for when I want to change the slide. No, it's fine, just so that you don't run ahead of you. Next slide. Chairperson, this is just the, we have four programs in the department that are running. The one is a support program, which is administration. And of course, there are a raft of things from myself to Chief Operations Officer, who is starting 1st of June. We've got internal audit, we've got risk management, we've got security services, we've got communication, we've got HR, we've got IT, legal, what CFO's office, and so on. So that is the support that we have as a department. The real programs, core programs of the department are three programs. We've got a program on inspection and enforcement services, we've got a program on public employment services, we've got a program on labor policy and labor market policy. So when we talk about programs, it will largely reflect what those three programs have done and some elements as well of the support in terms of the, what has been doing in the support area. We'll talk to the key aspects of the plan as requested by the chairperson of 9-10. We'll talk about our targets, how we have performed against those targets, and in areas where we have not met the targets, we'll explain what were the challenges. The first one, Chair, is the what we do with our targets. We ensure that they dovetail from the government 10 priority areas, as it were. One about how do we contribute to employment creation, which is the care for. Now, we had a target there of 6,000 permanent jobs to be registered on the system. Now, Chairperson, that target was a target for 4 quarters. Now, the progress report we're giving you there is actually progress report when we close the book on quarter 3. And as you can see, Chairperson, what has happened already on quarter 3, we're sitting at almost 90-odd% of the target. Now, if we had shown you just that the books closed late and all this, if we had shown you the quarter 4 target, we've already shot the lights out. So I'm very happy in terms of how the team has performed. So in fact, you'll see, Chairperson, that I think this team has still actually delivered, but we'll go through the details just now. But this is just quarter 3. We're already home and dry on this one. We've registered so many formal jobs, and on top of that, we also have 21,000 short-term jobs, job opportunities that we registered, and also have just under 2,000 training opportunities that we registered as well. On the next slide, we also have a target there of 65% of employment opportunities on the database that are filled within 90 days. So not only do we register people, but we want to make sure that we place the people, as it were. And those are the numbers that have happened. As you can see, a lot of placement has happened. Again, I want to emphasize it's quarter 3 numbers, but already they're looking good. And if we were to show you when we close the books, but by the time of preparing this report, the consolidation had not been completed, but when we present the annual report, there will be a full picture, because then all the information would have come in properly. So we did not want to cut corners and do half jobs and so on. So we thought, let's use the information that is already signed off. So the signed off information is quarter 3, but already on quarter 3, Chairperson, you can see that this department has been busy. Next slide. Then the employment opportunities on the database are filled through partnerships. So these are the partnerships that we've been having with either municipalities or the private sector. One of the things that we do as a department, Chairperson, is to ensure that the whole issue of social dialogue happens. So these are some of the results of the social dialogue. It was not just plain sailing, Chairperson. We had some problems with the ESA system, which was not fully functional, which impacted on a number of opportunities that were reserved. But we've been working on that system. What we did is we had to optimize the actual system. What would happen is that the system would crash, and the system would be too slow, and all those kinds of things. So what we then did is go back to Siemens to make sure that the system operates better. So that is working well as well now. So everything is going smooth. In terms of the employment, we've got also 40 out of the 125 labor centers. Chairperson, we only have 45. Employment service cancer. So that's the constraint that we have. So we're hoping that we'll get better resources going forward, so that in all the 125 labor centers, we have these employment service and counselors. This has become very, very important, Chairperson. These young people, some of them, their only hope is what the labor center can give them. So if we have a labor center without a career counselor, that is a challenge. So we're working on ensuring that we close that gap. Next slide, Chairperson. We just attempt there to just show in terms of the other program in the what progress we're making in terms of public employment services policy. It's the same program. What we have, Chairperson, is a situation where most of the work that we do now in public employment service, because of the move from skills have been moved now to the Department of Higher Education. Now, as a result of that, what we do under this space was not rooted in law. So what we're trying to do is to ensure that the activities of public employment service are actually based on a law. So we're busy with a draft bill right now, so that everything can be informed by that act eventually. But the process is quite advanced now. The draft bill has now been developed, and the organogram for public employment service has been approved as well. So this is moving fine. At some point, the minister will now take this draft bill to cabinet, but progress has been satisfactory there. The next slide is the response to economic crisis. This is a very important issue, Chairperson. How did the department respond to the economic crisis? Now, what the department did, at the time of the crisis, we still had NSF on our side as a department. So between NSF and UIF, there was 1.2 billion from each, amounting to 2.4 billion that was put aside for training layoffs. This was to ensure that we provide alternatives to retrenchments, so companies can rather use the money for training people and so on. So we put that 2.4 billion. By end of March, there were approximately over 3,000 workers that were participating in the scheme. Obviously, it's a number that we would have liked to have seen a much bigger number, but the control issues here are somewhat elsewhere we talked to just now. And also, through the CTMA, Chairperson, we saved some 16,000 odd jobs in the period ending March 2010 through various interventions to try and persuade companies to look at things differently. Next slide. On the next slide, we talk to continue on the response to the economic crisis. We talked to a pilot project involving 740 retrenched and unemployed learners at a cost of about 50 million that is currently underway in the Gauteng area. The project aims to test how best UIF and NSF can facilitate the re-entry into employment, and it will be evaluated, and depending on its success, we want to roll it out to other provinces. Already a few young people in this are very excited, Chairperson. This has given them a lot of hope. Next slide. Here we're just showing how you could save jobs through various strategies. We have another institution, Chairperson, called Productivity SA. This institution tries to do a whole lot of things to improve productivity in companies. Various interventions that are used to do that. Now, here's a list of things that we've done there. I think the important thing in this slide here is that firstly, we've had 9,000 or 10,000 jobs were impacted by this program. And the key issue here is that 82 strategies were developed. That talks to the number of companies that were actually assisted. Where we develop turnaround strategies for them. So that has helped to get companies moving forward. And others are listed there. Next slide, we talk about saving jobs again through strategic investments. Not only did we use the 1.2 from UIF, but once more, Chairperson, we also made 2 billion available for the IDC, and the target of the 2.4 billion was to go to distressed companies so that we can create more employment. So, Kelly Chairperson, you can see that his department is working hard to try and preserve employment. Slide. What were the constraints? Yes, there's been a slow uptake. One of the reasons is that Chairperson is that it's something that we don't force on people. Sometimes the workers themselves decide that it's better to take a retrenchment package. Some of them, sometimes they get blinded by the five-digit figures, the 300,000, and they think they can start a business, and they prefer to take that as opposed to carrying on with employment. So those are the things. So you can't force them to stay if they know that they have an option. So sometimes that is a problem. But again, the other issue, Chairperson, I think as government generally, we need to rid of ourselves the stigma of being inefficient as government. So private sector just thinks, we just hear this in the bar, that they think government going to take forever, red tape and all of that. So some of them are even discouraged to participate. So I think at another level, as we get more efficient as government, people will have a lot of trust that we can do things quickly. But those are some of the things that are happening there. Sometimes employers are not willing to provide detailed information. They don't know whether we're trying to corner them, all kinds of things. So I think it's just a symptomatic issue here that just shows that in terms of the trust relationship between government in general and private sector, there's an area there of improvement. Again, we're not angels on this ourselves. So in terms of insufficient marketing and communicating and ensuring that we tell people that we don't have as much red tape as they think, I think there's an area of improvement on our side as well. We could communicate more. So we're not angels on this one. So we're looking at all those things, Chairperson, to make sure that we improve the uptake. Next slide. Next slide, Chairperson talks to another branch, a second branch that I'm talking to, the one that talks to labor market policy. What's going on there? What we had planned to have done by end of March is to have finalized their bill. Chairperson, you would know that around December last year, one of the key issues that Parliament did was to get into a process of discussing labor brokers. Now, what our approach as a department, because there are such a lot of interlinkages, because what we did, we took the holistic approach to say, let's amend all the laws and just submit and see, because there's interrelationship. When you change this thing on this law, you want to make sure that the consequential effect on the other law is also corrected. So it's not just like a silo approach. So in doing that, when you have a snag on the one, you frustrate the whole process. Now, for instance, on employment equity and all of the other laws, there were no issues. And then came the LRA. And then on the LRA, Parliament started its own process of labor broking hearings, as it were. Now,
the portfolio committee.
Oh, thank you for the correction. Portfolio committee started that process. Now, we were not able then to ignore that process, so we had to wait for that process. Now, then, I'm not making a serious injury, Chairperson, but I think record will tell when that report became available, and we could not ignore that. So, as a result of waiting for that, we ended up missing our deadline on this. But we are pretty much on track right now. In terms of finalizing that that bill, he's sitting with the minister now, and the minister, I think, in no time he'll be taking to cabinet, and we should be on schedule this year sometime. But the minister is the one that's going to announce exactly what happens. But from our side, I think we we have done what we need to do. On the Employment Equity Act, for instance, one of the things that we wanted to do is to conduct investigations on 60 JSC listed companies, on what we call a DG review. This is where we go and check the information that companies have submitted on their report, just to check if everything is what it should be. So we went to check that with those companies, 67 of them that we checked. And we're making progress in terms of the number of companies that we targeted to do and the ones that we've done as of Q3. Again, keep reminding the chairperson that this is Q3 results on Q4 targets. On the next slide, it's just the number of splits that we do. What we've now started to do, chairperson, every month there is a monthly split inspection that happens, and hence the car has come into the picture. Now, on these monthly splits, we target vulnerable areas in particular. Things like areas like construction sector, we target hospitality sector, we target farms, and so on, just to make sure that the vulnerable workers are working in safe environments, in healthy environments, and so on. And we're pleased to report that although not all is well, but about 80% of the places that we visited were compliant, as it were. But again, chairperson, the weakness in the system is that sometimes you have to alert people that you are coming, because if you don't, and you're not clearly identifiable, people don't want to let you in. So in the process, they quickly fix things that are wrong. So sometimes what we show as compliance is sometimes artificial. People just quickly do something because they know inspectors are coming. So with the system that we are putting now, with these green cards and so on, where we can come unannounced, we think the inspections are going to be much more effective. Next slide. On this slide, we really just talked to a number of workplaces that were inspected in the hospitality sector with 44% compliance levels recorded. What that means, chairperson, is that in the hospitality sector, the issue of compliance is a challenge, and we are putting strategies to make sure that we make this sector much more compliant. One of the things that we do here in particular is the use of workers from other countries without work permits and all that. So that's the biggest issue here on the sector. And as a result of that, because that becomes offense number one, then offense number two is the minimum wage that they should pay. When they get people from foreign countries, then they can pay them peanuts, and these people can't complain because they know that they haven't got work permits. So it's got all those kinds of abuses that continue to happen. But we're on top of this, and we are issuing prohibition orders as we go along. Okay. I'm not going to read everything, chairperson. I think the others are just quick eye read. The next slide just talks to the procurement of green cards that we talked to. We will be increasing the supply of green cards, but as we speak right now, at least we have a 4x4 per province. It's a start, chairperson. We have one per province. I know it's not enough, but it's a start. We have one per province, 4x4, and we've got about, I think, an average of 5 of these cards. But it's not that we are starting from zero. There were cars and other things available. But this is just a new approach to inspection. These are now branded cars. So, progressive. Okay, do you have that detail here? Sorry? Okay. But on average, it's going to be on average about 5 before. Yeah, because it's going to be no less than 5. Generally, the problem. 4x4 and no less than 4 cars. We have a total fleet that we've purchased, that has been delivered as we speak, of about 50 cars. So So no less than 5%. We also are going to go into a uniform situation where inspectors, they do have uniform, but we're going to be even stricter now. So that when you see an inspector, he must look like one. So the kind of dignity that many police and traffic cops have, want that kind of outlook for our inspectors. Next slide. We all look like inspectors. From the department. Okay. Okay. So, and then a chapter on labor brokers. Where are we on this one? We're just showing you the progress throughout the year that we've done on labor broking. Bottom line is that we are very clear as a department what we want to do on this aspect. And I don't know if, and the only thing is that one can't talk too much detail because it will be discussed even before Parliament gets a proper opportunity to be given a proper document, even before Cabinet is approved, even before NetLeg is approved. But what I can assure the members here is that a lot of work has been done, and I can also say that the manifesto of the governing party has been used as it gave instruction that manifesto of the ruling party in terms of what needs to happen. That manifesto is very clear that we must prohibit abusive practices, we must deal with labor broking. So we have dealt with labor broking. We have prohibited abusive practices. But I can't talk to actual detail yet because of process issues. On the next slide, we also just mentioned some of the bills that are also there, basic conditions of employment. We're also looking at amending a few things there, especially on the issues of vulnerable workers, looking at issues around land tenure, all of those kinds of things happening in the farm, just to make sure that the workers don't get the raw end of the stick. Next slide. Here we talk about really just to strengthen the institutional capacity of the department. What we did, Chairperson, here, I just want to talk at a high level on this one, is that what we did is that we decided that given the strategy that we want to have, we then said, what does our organizational design look like? We then said, it's better that we get international help so that we benchmark our organizational design, organizational structure in terms of best practice. So we then engaged ILO to come and help us with that. And ILO came, and I'm happy to announce, Chairperson, that the organizational design, the structure that we have in the department to deliver the strategy, are structures that are internationally benchmarked. And so this department is operating at an internationally benchmark level. So from 1st of April this year, that's what we're doing with the department. So other departments around the world, when they look at our department, they will see something familiar. So that's what we've done. So we know that what we do is up there with the rest. Next slide. Really, here we talk to progress in terms of the target was to finalize the transfer of skills development to higher education. I think it's nitty-gritty that I left the Chairperson. Everything is basically done, but members of the team here will espouse a lot more detail. But issues of staff transfer has happened, issues of asset transfer has happened. It's just things like IT that is a challenge because you can't just have IT overnight. So it's all those kinds of issues. But everything else that could move has moved, even people physically have moved across. So simply because they don't have IT, there some of them still lurking in the department here and there. But we think by end of May, everything should be done. But the team can go talk to one all the details. We also had to ensure that we have one Gauteng provincial office. In the past, Chairperson, we've always reported 10 provinces in the department, something which was anomalous. So consolidate the Gauteng. We have one team in Gauteng that looks after Gauteng. So we're properly aligned now in terms of that. That took a lot of consultation with members of the department and to make sure that people are not negatively affected. That process went very smooth. The issue of audit, we just put an orange mark there because it's always a work in progress in terms of people that must sign off on this. It's not us, it's the AG. So we just reflect the whole progress that we think we are confident that it would have to be, we don't know what that would cause the qualification this year, but we think we have learned from our mistakes in the past. And we have tried to make sure that we put processes in place, systems in place, all of this. We are heading for a clean audit. It would have to be Muloi that will come in and disturb that process, etc. But otherwise, we think we're looking good from an audit and governance point of view. Next slide. On the next slide, we really just talk to the issue of the vacancies in the department. Two issues, Chairperson, that we just want to mention. That there's a lot of work that has happened to reduce the vacancy rate. We reflect two figures. We reflect the 14% vacancy rate, which is what is reflected on the PESA. But the PESA is very conservative. It does not take into account the fact that, if you look, for instance, Chairperson, just as an example, we know that the COO is starting 1st of June, but on the PESA, it would reflect vacancy because that person has not actually started. So there are a lot of those kinds of people that everything is done. Sometimes it's a question of waiting for SAFA to verify qualifications, NIA to do the vetting, but from the department side, there's nothing more we can do. If you take that into account, then the figure comes to 6.76% vacancy rate. But we reflect both figures just to be totally transparent to say, if you had to go and check us, we'll find 14%. But we want to say to the chairperson that that 14% does not recognize the fact that the pipeline, that everything is already done from our side, is actually put in the 6.76%. But that's where it sits. Next slide. The plan, we then had another target to improve the management of the IT. Chairperson, I think this has been one of the biggest problems in the department, this IT capability. But what we've done is a lot of things, including making sure that on a regular basis, the villages get much more involved in making sure that they sign off on all the activities around IT. So, and making sure that the business requirements are accurately defined so that the IT services can be enabled. So that process has been going well. And we are confident that, you know, Chairperson, when last year sometimes when we started to look at this whole thing, we found a situation where, if you like, the IT contract, which is supposed to expire in 2 years' time, at the point of checking this last year sometime, we found that although 80% or so of the contract time had expired, but the delivery was not at 80%, it was far below. So what we've now done is to ensure that by April next year, we put a kind of a program that will ensure that by April next year, that everything that should have been delivered is delivered. And that also gives us, after that, some time to check through the teething problems of the system. So we put very tight data, put a lot of pressure on Siemens to bring in more resources at no additional cost, more resources to ensure that what we paid for, we get our value for money. It has not been easy, but we worked very hard to ensure that we bring everything up to speed. Okay. And then Chairperson is the figure, then the CFO says he wants to do this himself. So I will hand over to the CFO.
I remember during one of the meetings we had, we advised that at labor center we should have a program to assist workers and employees, specifically in the farm. And what we are observing now is that it's like there's a very, very serious problem in the farm. Hence, farmers are being killed by employees. And you made mention of those people, the foreigners, who come in without the working permit and to go and work there. And what I would like to know, if this function belongs to you, to see to it that there's harmony in the farm, because it's like slavery is at the peak in the farm. No wonder employers are retaliating by murdering. And you also mentioned that employers not willing to provide this information, blah, blah. And do you have something that you are doing to assist overcome those problems? Because what is happening now in the farm is denting the new administration of President Zuma. And your department is there. And it is there to see to it that it implements something that will cap all those problems, so that this government is seen to be working on a need of which we do something. Because it's useless to come and make good presentations, whereas on the ground, there's a hell lot of hassle going on, and we are responsible for that as public representatives. Now, I'm posing this question for the group said to at least to clarify me precisely what is it that if you are also bothered every day you wake up in the morning, you are bothered about what is going on in the farm. What do you have in mind, or do you have something already in situ or in pipeline?
Let members ask questions, because I think it's the huge, yeah. So let's ask questions, and then the CFO will come. Honorable Kronova.
Thank you, Honorable Che. Because I've already got a lot of questions, but I'll just with the previous speaker add something there, and I want to know from the department, is it really going so bad on the farms as we hear and we thought it's going on the farms? I know in some places it's going bad, but really I don't think it's really going so bad. And the problem I've had here is with foreigners, And I think the foreigners is our major problem, especially in provinces like Limpopo and Mpumalanga, because it is close to the border. The people is flocking in there, and this is the people who take the jobs from our South African citizens. And I think your department has a big job to do in that areas. And what is your findings there regarding this foreigners and taking jobs from our citizens? From my side, I think that's the problem we have. And we must solve this problem in one or other way to the benefit of our people in South Africa. Okay, I'll just add with that. So, thank you.
My interpretation is there is a huge challenge with the ESTA law. ESTA, the law which regulates or protects farm workers' rights to stay on farm. And there's a huge call to review the law because it's clearly not in the interest of farm workers. It's so easy to be granted an interdict via the court, not taking in consideration the input of the farm worker. So I think there should be mechanism to review the loopholes in the law. The other one is that I saw that your law enforcement is doing very good work, but from the point where I'm sitting, it seems to me it's just in the convenience area. Those 80% law enforcement which took place, it's like in your industrial sector, your construction sector, your security sector. But basically, the level of exploitation which has taken place at the domestic workers level, the level of exploitation taking place on farm workers, workers itself, there is no access. Those people don't even know the existence of the inspectors on that system. I hear that there is a point which is going in the good direction, which is to give resources to law enforcement via vehicles. But I think that it's going to take the department many years to reach the broader sector, which is farm exploitation. One thing which I also want to know is that how does we optimally utilize our sitas in the industry? Not only on your large concentrated sectors, but also in those sectors who are scattered. I'm coming back to farm workers. How can we produce figures where we'll be able to say that this man was a farm worker for 30 years, farm worker today is a farm owner. Those kind of legacies which you want to see taking us forward. Also, there is one thing, the issue of you says that you saw 65% post in 90 days. But we have this challenge, it's a political challenge. This government wanted to fill 500 vacancies. In the same time, there was 900 job losses in our country. How does you compare and how you identify it? Because you want to absorb people in the working sector, in the other sector you're losing people. And what happened about in the business sector? Because we are speaking about business jobs. There are so many sectors who lost people in jobs. I'm coming from a fishing sector. And fishing, this speaks for itself. People are worse than off today prior they were engaged themselves in industry. And the issue of the skill transfer, skill development must be very high on our program. So because there's this thing of an employable person and another thing of an unemployable person. I think we must reach a state in our country where we're able to say that whoever left at least any institution must become employable. So I'm saying those 10% are am I able in terms of my question?
The last one. On page 15, there's this thing, slow uptake and then retrenchment packages prepared. What I would like to know is that, is there any counseling or advice the unit that or process where this people go through before taking a decision? Because through experience, we see people who prefer packages suffering at the end of the day, and they end up being absorbed by crime syndicates, and they end up getting involved in things that are not allowed by the law, and I take retrenchment packages as a running towards poverty, back to poverty, because within 6 months the 300,000 is gone, even within a month, and those people go back to poverty. So is there something that we are doing in order to give counsel or make them understand that taking this retrenchment packages means going back to poverty, because we cannot solve a problem of poverty while creating poverty.
Mine is on page 8. Employment opportunities on the database are filled through partnerships. You mentioned partnerships, but you mentioned only one province. Oh, there's one also in the process. But if we can get information of all provinces, whether you only have this partnership, you signed partnerships only in these two provinces, let it be clear. And let us know when will these other provinces be involved. And then on page 9, the constraint, the labor center. I remember I found you were in the hall, and you didn't come back. Yes, because what we found in Limpopo, your department, your officials there, they were using the center, but then they left the office and they come once a week on a Wednesday. They're using the mobile unit. So if you can just find out whether when they come, whether they still paying for the office and using the mobile, or maybe something is happening there, but if we can get information. And the draft bill has been developed. We are keen. So, because all these laws, I think, as we hear members speaking, if we can look at our laws and try to change, to amend our laws so that the employer go according to what the law says. So if you can maybe tell us when will this draft will come, we are really waiting for it. Whether it will be Section 76 or Section 75, so that if it's Section 76, we can say and start in the NCOP after it's going to come to the center. Because definitely we have to go through the problem. And the 16,530 jobs, the breakdown. Maybe when we requested you to we didn't indicate, but I thought this department knows that everything that we request must be provincially. So if we can get that, even if it's not today, because we are not going to debate the budget vote in the House, but I think with this information, as the committee, we're going to initiate a topic for discussion in the House after all the budget votes have passed. Because this is a very important information that really needs the world to hear about, so that we debate and we people are aware what the department is doing. And the pilot project on page 12. Maybe to say I'm not being funny, but why did you start in Gauteng? You know, why didn't you start in Limpopo or Mpumalanga? The Varuna, the pilot project, should have, you know, I think it's important to recognize this rural provinces. So how 10 years and how long will this pilot project be? Campaign for the pilot project to be taken to other provinces. I think I want, you know, specify the companies that were assisted, if we can get to know which one and where, which province. The other one is on the retrenchment packages. Honorable Mabija asked whether there is a unit that trains the workers to be counselors. So if there is no unit, maybe as a select committee, we can say, let's look at having, you know, a unit in the department that will assist workers. Because as I'm seated, I can say, okay, I just want my 100,000, I want to go home. I think it's a lot of money, as a member has said. But if maybe we can have that program of assisting, training, because I remember even when we visited MTN, because we are also communication. When we visited MTN, it was the time when they say there are voluntary packages, and then we said, they said other people doesn't have skills, so they are giving them their packages. And then we said, why don't you train them instead of giving them packages, retrenchment packages? So like, for instance, if we can have, but let's have something in the department, if possible, create and talk to the treasurer that the importance of this, and this is the select committee's idea to say, let's, as a unit, do what to do. Are you adding to what I'm... Okay, I think it's a very, very... I think it's important to look at all our laws, and then we are aware of which ones are going to be amended. On page 17, the bids. When do we do our bids? Are we only looking at vulnerable area or child labor? What do we do about that? When we do our bills, do we come across something that is really not on our agenda? Or if we do that, what do we? And then if we have the 80% compliance level, the list of those areas that you have visited and the families. And 1,560 workplaces were inspected in the security sector. And then if you go again to the rural areas, we've got these lodges besides the security sector. But we've got these lodges when we go taking parliament to the people, we sleep at some of the lodges in the far rural. And we find the workers. they are not actually, not that they are actually not very satisfied. They go to a corner and talk. Say, here, this is what is happening. For example, we slept at Lape. If you can tell your inspectors in this area to make a visit, to go there, talk to the workers, talk to the employer, so that they can get whole information of what is happening. And then we will make a follow-up of as the committee and the department, what is it that we can do. Thank you, DJ. Honorable, then, yeah, we'll follow up.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also on page 17, in fact, it means adding to what she's been saying. We say we have 122,459 workplaces inspected and 80% compliance level were supported. According to experience, in our department, right across South Africa, we have a problem of Jojo. I think you are not hearing this word for the first time. And that is a very infectious word and practice that is going around in departments. Now, I just want to find out if when we say we have 80% compliance level recorded, do you have an effective monitoring tool to monitor if the information that is brought back to your office is real? Because if I have this and so that I give it, if I say I'm giving you 50,000, please be positive and don't behave, you did not say this. That is going to happen. And we will come back and give you a positive report, whereas there's chaos at that area. So I just want to know, are you aware that Jojo is ruling in South Africa, right across all departments? And is your department not one of the infected ones by this virus, Jojo?
Can you know what? We've got a lot of things on the table. What do you think you have? Can you come this side and join me on our board and call?
Thank you, Jay. I just thought maybe a Georgia is something you can eat. Chairperson, thank you. I've got a couple of questions. I first want to know how many vehicles are in the fleet you have now in South Africa, and how many vehicles per province, if you can give that information to us. I know that the main, if you're looking into your budget, the biggest amount is coming from the state. But do you have any other income except from the state? Are there any other income into your department you get? I know the biggest amount is subsidy from the state. For paying for officers and officials and everything that too. And then there's the 16,530 safe jobs. It's basically nothing. If you see what happened at the end of last year, we've lost thousands of jobs. And my question there is, you said that your department saved a lot of jobs. I think we appreciate that. But can we really get into the private sector and force companies to say, but listen, you must see that you keep these people in the jobs they lost in, if it's going bad in such a company, and they can't afford to have the people in the company for any longer. And then I want to know, what are the companies doing with the sectors who's not complying with the standards you have? You said you will take action, but I want to know, what kind of action are you going to do if they not comply? Then I also want to know, and this question was already raised in some other way, how many offices do you have in South Africa, and then especially in different provinces? Do all the provinces have an office now at this stage, or are there still offices who there's no offices from your department? And then I also think that is a very good attitude from the department side to put pressure on companies who deliver the IT equipment to our offices. That is the right attitude. And one thing we learn in what happened in South Africa, especially in municipalities, is that they pay the people in advance, and then they never get the services from the companies. So I think what you've done is the right way to do. Put pressure on them and pay them after they deliver, and then you get the job done. And okay, that's one I asked. And then I want to know, what everything is going well now in a lot of sectors in South Africa, construction and everything. In 2010, the soccer, the stadiums, there was thousands of jobs created in the roads, the Gauteng train. I think that was a booming time for a lot of things. But what after that? Now the stadiums are completed, the whole thing is really completed, and a lot of construction on our roads, especially on around our big cities, is busy in the final stage. And what will happen after that? Because there is thousands and thousands of jobs. Are you seeing future jobs? What other kind of jobs are the department going to create, or South Africa going to create, to keep these people in sustainable jobs? And I'm very worried about that, because that's another million or one jobs in danger. Last one. And then we've got also a problem in Gauteng, in the Grootvlei mine. There was also a lot of workers now recently, it was on the news last week, and basically every day, people are striking there because they're not getting paid by the mine. And they sit there for basically 2-3 months now without paying. And I'm worried about that. We can't let people do something for the mine, and it looks like from the side that the mine starts trying to force the people to do the job so that they can get the gold out of the mine. But they haven't got the payment yet. So what are the department going to do about this very situation now at this point? Sorry. Yeah.
Doesn't mind
if someone, if we have time, then
you, after everything, then you
come back because I think it's just thousands. Some of the challenges which are raised by the DG here today, it's not a core function of the department. As for example, the migration or xenophobia, for example. It's a government relations forum. Although we understand there is some challenges, because everyone who goes there goes with his clean mandate and don't want an additional work to be done. I want to know is that how does it deal with this? There is social problem. Even your law enforcement agents, are they linked with other law enforcement agents, like police? When they arrive on a farm and there is a domestic violence case, how is there any linkage between the law enforcement agencies? So they do not only go for purely go look for compliance, but could also assist our country to deal with the issue of crime. So for me, that one is crucial. The one in your IT department, which says that 80%, it might be that 80% work is paid, but no, is paid but not done, which means that is seen as a fruitless expenditure. You see that work is done, work is not done, but the service provider is paid upfront for it. Although you said that there is now mechanism to stop it happening. But that can be a very it's one of the risks of an organization of spending for what was not rendered to the department. So I think those three for me is critical: the issue of the intergovernmental relations forum, the issue of the linkage between the other agencies, and the issue of underspending or fruitless expenditure by services which are not rendered. Thanks.
Okay, let me welcome
honorable
Jacob.
Thank you.
Honorable Jacob represents the Free State in this committee, and he has attended another meeting of which is chairing. In the end of the year, everybody has got a position. So that's why he has just arrived. You are welcome. Okay, can you
thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have a team of experts here. So what I want to request the Chairperson allow is allow all these experts that own this program to talk to each of the questions relating to their areas. And then whatever is not been picked up, I'll cover. Start with the CFO here and work our way down.
The one that I probably can respond to is the issue of how many cars in the department. We've got three schemes in the department. We've got lease cars, we've got subsidy scheme cars, and also we just acquired the pool cars, which is commonly known as the green cars. Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers for the two. The one that is clear that I have in my mind is the 50 that we just acquired. I'll then maybe promise to give that table in terms of each option, how many cars we have.
The question was, where else are we utilizing our income other than these cars?
Well, I think for us, for the department, these cars is the only source of income other than the other programs that are funded directly. UIF and compensation comes in mind where they are directly linked to the public, but they are funded outside the department.
Thank you, Chair. I will talk to the issue of the information technology. Thank you. It is correct that we have not properly managed the IT issues, more especially in system development. Now the contract is split into two. 90% of it is on the infrastructure. Now in that area, we say we got value for money. But it is only 10%, which is the systems to actually build inefficiencies in the department, that we have done very poorly. Now, as the DG said, we then have, and most of it is purely around government. We did not put in place appropriate structures to ensure that we manage this area. And we've seen improvement in this area, and we hope that in the next 12 months we will recoup in terms of value what was supposed to be delivered.
And we would like to have that information. So
Tenants one is what the DG raised earlier in the presentation that we are looking at, but it is not a law that is administered by this department also. It is administered by the Department of Agriculture for Rural Development and Land Reform, as they are known. And we would be having discussions with them specifically around the issue of the labor tenants, which is quite different from the Land Tenure Act, which is the ESTA where people get evicted and all of that. But I know from having seen their strategic plans that they are also going to address that matter, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So our interest is the issue of the labor tenants and how vis-a-vis the sectoral determination for farm workers, how we then protect the working conditions of labor tenants. That's the first one. The second issue that I want to come to is the issue of the, also raised by, I think it's raised by Honorable Grunewald, about the 16,000 jobs saved. Those jobs were mainly saved as a result of interventions and facilitation by the CCMA. Now, when companies retrench, they have to follow Section 189A of the Labor Relations Act. And the CCMA is then called upon to do facilitation on how to minimize the impact of the retrenchment. So what the CCMA would be doing is to engage with the parties, and particularly to say to employers, but have you explored all the alternatives? Isn't there something more that you can do instead of retrenching people? So it is through those processes of facilitation where the CCMA assisted the parties to come to an amicable solution. And through those interventions, they have saved this number of jobs. The issue is that in the context of the response to the economic crisis, two senior leadership leaders, Barbie from COSATU and Bobby Gottschall from Business, issued a joint statement calling upon employers to be more sensitive in this period of the economic crisis to the issue of job loss, and that they should meaningfully engage at all times in order to look at alternatives to save jobs, rather than just to retrench and use the economic crisis as a reason to retrench people. So those two leaders have put out the statement, and we can only encourage that employers do take that seriously in retaining jobs rather than to use the crisis to retrench people. So that is what is being done. And of course, the training layoff scheme is also being promoted in order to assist employers in as an alternative to retrenchment. There was also the question around what happens after the construction projects. Construction, by its very nature, is a seasonal business. Building is like that as well. Building of houses, you get a peak of construction of houses, and then you get a slowdown. And similarly, with these construction projects, the people that are working on the stadia now will work in other areas of construction post the World Cup. The stadia are done, they built, but there will be other construction projects that come up. So, but it is of a seasonal nature. You get peaks and lows in the building industry, building and construction industry, just like you get on the farm. With the planting and harvesting season, you get this ups and downs of that. But again, for the longer term, government has announced to the industrial policy action plan and the new growth fund that is being talked about to make some structural changes in the economy so that the economy is more labor absorbing in the long term. So those things need to feed through and are being implemented to try and put the country on a new growth path, new industrial policy action plan that will bring about sustainable employment and a more labor-absorbing economy over the long term. And that's the only way you're going to be able to deal with some of those issues. Thank you.
The issue of labor tenants, the one that you were responding to, Honorable CP, I think we've been sitting in the boardroom like this for quite a long time. For now to say it's for the Department of Agriculture, I think an action should have been taken. Not now, not going to be taken. It should have long been taken to talk to the Department of Agriculture to say, this is the problem that we have, what are we doing? Yeah, that's the one I'm still on that issue, because actually it's irritating. We're sitting in boardrooms. We're sitting here every now and then, listening, but no action. Because it's not the first time that we meet with the Department of Labor, and we met even beyond 2009, 2005. We've been sitting, but these things have been there for I can say, since. When we're not doing anything, we're talking, we can see that this is the Department of Agriculture's issue, but we're not saying, Department of Agriculture, can we sit down, because this is the problem that we are encountering in the farm. We should sit down and do something and come up with a program of action instead of all the time saying, this is what is happening, because I also, sitting here as the chair of the select committee, it's not nice if maybe my committee is seen as non-functional, because we can't sit here and listen every now and then. There must be action that must be done. Can you say, from when you get to the office, DG, you look at the issue, you write to the DG of the Department of Agriculture, you meet, and you tell us what has been done, progress on that. Thank you.
I just wanted to clarify, Chairperson, because
I think the Chairperson has made the point. Just leave it at that. We'll revert with a clear program of action,
yes,
and collaboration with other departments.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave it at that for now. Jan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to deal with a few questions around inspectorate. And then my chief inspector also here with me will add and pick up on some of the questions. On ensuring harmony within the farm, what is the department doing? I think what we need to realize here is the fact that we have the sectoral determination on farm. We set minimum wages and conditions of employment which farmers have to comply to, which regular inspections are conducted to ensure that they comply. But with the current situation where we have farmers killed and also the farm workers are assaulted, and it's not only the farm workers, also in some instances the officials of the department which are inspectors get assaulted, where we need to then seek assistance from police in terms of accompanying our inspectors to the farm. So this is a difficult area where we have to enforce to ensure a compliance to legislation. We have also identified the agricultural sector as one of the sectors where we can tackle this massively, because we have identified it as another sector or a problematic sector. So it's in the list of inspections that we're conducting on a monthly basis. We, in terms of coming closer to the question, in terms of creating harmony, we would recall that we have a protocol agreement in terms of ensuring access to funds, where AgriSA is part of that agreement. But further than that, there are provinces which have taken initiatives in terms of establishing those partnerships within the provinces. And these partnerships are tripartite in nature, where we have employer organizations, which is the farmer, we have a trade union representing workers, we have government. In some of the provinces, we have also CCMs participating, like recently, this kind of a structure was launched in Mpumalanga, and it's been working. It's not just launched, it has been working for quite some time, but it has been recently launched to realize the concerted effort in terms of ensuring that we work together in terms of ensuring compliance within the farmland, especially protection of vulnerable workers. We have the same kind of cluster also in Limpopo. We also have a pilot project that's been running for the past year and also in the financial year, where we try to promote and ensuring health and safety in farms. Again, that's part of the farmers are participating and the willingness which has been demonstrated among farmers in Limpopo in terms of the pilot project. But as I say, that is continuing. It started last year, we're continuing this year with the same kind of project. After we've evaluated the project, we then spread to other provinces. We also have I think the DG has spoken to this in terms of improving and increasing visibility of our inspectorate. I think the uniforms that we're talking to and the green card, we over and above increasing visibility, also to ensure the farmers or our inspectors are easily identified and the decision can be made in terms of saying this is an inspector coming to do his or her work. So that will assist us in that area. Also, a mention has been made here of the amendment of legislation to strengthen the inspection in terms of the capacity in numbers for inspectors, and also in terms of giving inspectors keys to say when we have an inspection, when we're ensuring compliance with new business, we ensure that there are penalties now included in the legislation, where a labor inspector can be able to issue a fine on the spot where there are cases of instances of non-compliance. On the other questions in terms of the monitoring tool on the compliance level and the Aurora incident, I think Mr. Lamanti, the chief inspector, will talk to you today.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. With regards to the issue of the child labor, when we go out and do inspection, especially around the issue of around farms, one of the things that we do is we look at the issue of child labor. And we have picked up a few cases over the years, and we have successfully prosecuted those cases. And we have recently promulgated a law which deals with the worst forms of hazardous situation where children are exposed to. So we have promulgated that legislation. And the most important thing that I want to stress is that on cases where we find child labor, we don't work alone as the Department of Labor. We work with the Department of Social Services, and we work with the Department of Education, because when we remove that child from that environment, the Department of Education needs to make sure that child goes to school, and the Department of Social Development needs to take care of other social related matters. So we do collaborate with other government departments. On the issue, for instance, of dealing with migrant workers, we work with the immigration officials when we go out and do inspections, so that they can deal with their issues and we deal with labor related matters. There was a question on whether we target convenient places. I would like to state here that we don't only target places that are convenient to us as a department. We go to the most rural areas. I can tell you that recently we have been to KwaZulu-Natal. We went to the sawmills, and the sawmills are located in the most rural areas. And we went there and we did our inspection. So we also went to Mpumalanga as a person. There's a place called Sabi in Mpumalanga. So we went to Sabi. There's a sawmill called York Timber. Okay? So we went there to do inspection. So we also prioritized Mpumalanga as well. On the issue of the monitoring and the authenticity of the reports that we get from our inspectors, we have checklists that we use, and in each and every checklist that is completed by the inspector is required to indicate whether the company complies or not. But most importantly, in that checklist, they must indicate the name of the employee that they've spoken to when they conducted an inspection, because it is a requirement that whenever inspector goes out to do an inspection, they must not only talk to the employer, but they must talk to the employees and the state union. And also they must talk to the health and safety reps of each and every area in your workplace whenever they conduct inspection. So we do have those checks and balances, and the inspection checklists are available for are available. We have established a roving team, which is made up of inspectors that are drawn from different provinces, and those inspectors are responsible for going out to all provinces and conduct inspection, so that we can be able to cover even those remote areas. But most important, to deal with the issue of torture. Because we understand that in some instances there's some cozy relationship between inspectors and employers. So to deal with that, it's important that you put together a team of inspectors which are not familiar with the environment, and then you unleash them so that they come to inspection. There's a question on the hot flea, the Aurora mine. This matter was reported to the Department of Labor, and we sent our inspectors there to do an investigation, and initially an undertaking was issued to the company to pay the workers, and they undertook to do that, and they did not honor the undertaking. A compliance order was then issued, and the company did not honor the date which was set for compliance with the with the compliance quota. We were now in the process of referring the matter to the labor court so that the labor court can make the order of the court, and that's where we are with the conflict, the Aurora line. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just on the, just to add to our colleague's question around the programs in the labor centers to address the problem of farm workers. Among the things that we've done as part of our legislative amendment was to introduce a provision in the Employment Services Act with the main intention of clearly outlining and giving a mandate to our labor centers on the things that they are supposed to do. The starting point is that employment of foreigners should not in any way impact on the employment status, living conditions, income status of local people. And you criminalize, and the second point that we are looking at there is that we are working with Home Affairs in the recommendation of work permits. Before there was no legislation in the department that clearly indicated what is it that we are supposed to look at before we can recommend for the issuing of that work permit and so on. And in the bill, we are clarifying exactly the kind of things that are supposed to be looked at. The procedures that an employer is supposed to follow before they can employ a foreigner and so on, and the conditions under which a foreigner can be employed. And we have also strengthened the powers of the inspector in the bill to issue spot fines and to take along police to arrest an employer who has transgressed those provisions. If they employed, for instance, an illegal foreign worker, etc. And we have also put very strict conditions for bringing to the country what we call skilled workers, because a lot of people came into the country under the disguise of being skilled workers and shortages and so on. And we have put in clear procedures that are supposed to be followed, including the kind of steps that will have to be implemented to make sure that within a specified period there is a transfer of those skills to local people and so on. Because those provisions were repealed in the Immigration Act because the feeling was that those were no longer not immigration matters and they should bring belong somewhere. And we're working with Home Affairs to make sure that we strengthen that component. Just on the, there were two questions relating to seekers and the skills. The one was the optimal utilization of seekers in the farms, and the other one related to putting skill development high in the agenda. I think we agree fully with those proposals. The only challenge that we are sitting with is that I think late last year we did brief the Select Committee on the transfer function, and that has now happened. And it's an issue that, from our point, we looked at and we're discussing this matter with Treasury as well, with the intention of securing additional funding for subsidies in the other areas. But to prioritize areas such as farm workers, etc. From where we're sitting, the only way you can drive that is if you attach certain incentives to specific programs for seekers to move in that direction. And we will be taking up this matter with our colleagues in higher education and training. When we had control, the NSF was used precisely for those kind of purposes, because we had the CETA funds that were at their disposal, and we had the National Skills Fund. Now, the strategic project that
were launched to address the plight of the poor in the rural areas was to make sure that we begin to move the focus away from the main cities to also assist those areas, and using the National Skills Fund as an incentive to address the plight of people in rural areas, women and people with disability, because those were highlighted in the strategy. Whether that will continue or not is something else, because the Department of Labor is no longer in charge of the program. There was a question around the intervention measures that we have in the department to try and persuade workers or discourage them from taking retrenchment packages. Now, broadly speaking, this matter affects communities, it affects trade unions, it affects government, and it affects employers. But from our side, we do have a social plan program. Now, that social plan program is run by Productivity South Africa that we fund in the region of 29 million for this current financial year. We're looking at a region of something like 47 million. The social plan program has got three stages. The first stage is that where companies indicate a problem of job losses or they start losing sales and so on, they normally alert Productivity South Africa. And the first stage is to try and develop turnaround strategies. This has to do with looking at productivity improvement measures that can be done to improve or to turn around the company and to make sure that you avoid closure. Now, once that has failed, the second stage is the counseling, which is basically talking to employers, talking to workers, and alerting them to the dangers of retrenchment and so on. And we do have rapid response teams in our provinces. The shortcomings that they were mainly based in the provinces, and they work well in KZN and the Western Cape and Gauteng. And that was precisely because Productivity SA had offices in those three areas. And the challenge now is to try and make sure that in all provinces, Productivity SA has got that presence and linkages with the Department of Labor, provincial offices and labor centers, so that rapid response teams can then increase or accelerate their work in counseling of workers. Because with the retrenchment last year, they were far outstretched and they could not respond to all the requests in companies, because in most cases, retrenchment were at short notice and the counseling was not effective. The DG did talk about the number of career counselors that we also have. We only have 45 throughout the whole country, and even that did not assist given the scale of retrenchment that we had. And the last stage in the social plan is to look at alternative employment programs, which we do with the municipalities and so on. And because of the large scale of retrenchment, we were not that effective. I think in the Western Cape, we're involved in a process with the Department of Trade and Industry to try and deal with the problem of the workers in the coastal areas because of the quota systems that were introduced within the fishing industry, and I shared those meetings with Lamar and others. And the whole idea was to try and look with the environmental aspects, alternative employment interventions in the light of the quotas that they introduced, because we agree with you, it did have a major impact, especially in the small boat fishing industry. And even now, that problem is not yet resolved because environmental aspects could could not implement some of the things that we have agreed in the committee until our minister decided to say, look, if there is not going to be implementation of things that we have agreed to, then the department cannot keep on interacting with that process and so on.
I think that one is a similar thing that we have just spoken about. So I think if we can get that in black and white also, so that we are able to deal with that. If the other department directly speak, then we will be able to talk to both ministers. And because we, at the end of the day, we must also account. So if you encounter problems, then the department is in there. So this is a similar one. You take it on, you want the thing black and white.
And can we, I think it's clear that if you can get the other one, if you can get
there were just two more questions.
Okay.
Yes. There was a question around the partnerships and the UIF NSF project that affects 740 learners. Now, that there was a lot of debate and discussions. I wouldn't want to go to that, but we had to start somewhere. And with the project on its own is about 18 months, involving those 740 learners, retrenched workers and unemployed workers. We are evaluating the impact of the project, and as part of this training layoff and the issues that Mr. Kettle has raised, we are looking at the training layoff task team on how best can we expand the program, because it does have serious implications, and I think the president also wanted answers from us on what is it that is going to happen beyond the World Cup. Now, the fact that we have money that was not spent, or that is moving quite slowly in the training of it, because of the reasons that the DG mentioned. Around people preferring retrenchment, etc. The issue that we are going to be interrogating has to do with how we can expand that project to seasonal workers and construction workers, because most of them are now registering for UI. We will be paying UIF, but our intention is to make sure that for people who have learned some skills and they would want to further their learning program, we'll rather put them on those programs so that they get a full qualification or a certificate working with higher education and training than to just resort to unemployment insurance benefits. So those are some of the projects that we are looking at so that we are able to intervene, especially beyond the World Cup, because we realize that that could be another serious problem where we are likely to lose jobs. And I just wanted to briefly comment on the saving of jobs. That I think when we mentioned the question of saving of jobs, there is often underestimation of the role that the Department of Labor plays in this area. If you look at the UIF alone, it has got something like 42 billion rand, and the compensation fund in the region of 27 billion rand. Those monies are invested with the Public Investment Corporation. Now, often you would see airports such as Cape Town being developed. And we normally say the private sector is developing those airports. And yet, in reality, some of them would have borrowed money, like that of the unemployment insurance fund, from the Public Investment Corporation to build those kind of infrastructure. because we borrow that money to them at a very, very low interest rate of about 5%. And when those jobs are created, the credit goes to the private sector, as opposed to saying, we have received this money, which was an investment of the Unemployment Insurance Fund or Compensation Fund, to build Cape Town International Airport, and we've created so many jobs. And as part of the process going forward, we are going to hold accountable the PIC and a number of all these people who get loans from the Unemployment Insurance Fund and the Compensation Fund to give a breakdown of the jobs that they are going to create and the projects that they are implementing, so that the general public can also see who is actually putting money here. Yeah.
Am I hearing the floor?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is one question. I think the question was whether we looked into our law and see which laws to amend. And the second question was whether we have reviewed our laws to see whether there are no loopholes in the law. At present, the position is that we have already indicated that there are bills that have been drafted. For instance, the Employment Services Bill is a new law. We did not have that law. That bill has been drafted and has been finalized. We also have the Labor Relations Act. There are amendments to the Labor Relations Act, such as repealing Section 198 of the Labor Relations Act, which dealt with issues of temporary employment services, commonly known as the labor broking. That provision now is going to be regulated in the Employment Services Bill. But there are also consequential amendments made to legislation such as the Occupational Health and Safety, Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. There are also amendments to the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Yes, in as far as the loopholes is concerned, we dealt with the issues of loopholes and provided issues such as the keys to the law. Yeah, I know that this doesn't exist in the law, the keys. Keys, we refer to issues such as criminalization of this legislation. We also provided issues such as fines in the legislation. The bills are all finalized as we are speaking today. They have already been submitted to the executive authority, and we are looking at them as the top management of the department. That is the status of the bills now. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Round up. Firstly, just because it's one of the legal.
Just before the round up, I don't know whether this is happening. According to my perception of your function as labor department, is that you deal with all the departments concerning labor issues. If I'm correct, say in home affairs, I'm a year old now here in Cape Town as a member of parliament. But I have already discovered that there's a group of home affairs employees who hire people in the community to go around fishing foreigners in order to give them a permit, working permit, and business licenses. And they are selling those things at plus minus 9,000. And I'm just saying this because this is the only place where I can alert you as the Department of Labor, because that thing originates from workers within the Home Affairs, even though I don't have something in hand. But I'm 100% sure and correct that thing is happening, because I saw
through it, and it was explained to me that the what is happening. In the eventually, that thing is going to create a problem for us. I'm just giving you information so that you can negotiate with your market, because it's your workers who are doing those things. And maybe it is happening right across all the departments, all the workers, because what we have also discovered is that people are hired to work, are employed to work. And instead of working, the community to get service from employees of the government, they must first put 2,000 or 5,000 in their IDs, and they'll put it in front of the officials. If there's no money in the ID or whatever, or a document, then that person will go, will be sent from pillar to pillar. Come after 2 weeks. When he comes, come after, because he's not giving something to buy service from an employee. I just want you to be aware of what is happening. And that thing is creating havoc within the communities, because communities are not supposed to be buying service from employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on that one, I just undertake that I'll write a letter to the DG of Home Affairs to explain so on, but we'll do that. Thanks for alerting us. Chairperson, just before I go to the questions, I just wanted to say sometimes the legal people, they use language, and I don't know where there's media here. I don't want to see a headline that says we will regulate labor brokers, we will not regulate labor brokers. I just want to make that abundantly clear. If there is media here, there's no, because the word was used when the DDG was talking to this. We will not regulate labor brokers. We're going to deal with them very differently, but I can't talk to details now. That's the one thing. Chairperson, just to pick up some of the gaps, the question was asked here, is it so bad in the farms? And is the resounding yes, so bad. In fact, when I went to the chairperson, that afternoon I was not able to eat. I was so stressed out. I went to the Western Cape in the Worcester area, in particular the Dwarren area, that we went to. Those are fish farms in that area. But what is happening in that chairperson was really shocking. I can categorize the abuse there into three different categories. One, at an admin level. What we picked up there is that at an admin level, what the farmers do is that we know that agriculture is seasonal. Now, when the workers are off in that particular season, they don't deregister them from the books. They keep them in the books. Now, the worker knows that in the next 6 months, I'm not working. And then this worker goes to the UIF to try and get the UIF benefits. But when we do our work in the UIF to check, we find, when we call the employer, we have to confirm unemployment, we find that no, but this person is still in the books. So they discharge workers, but they keep them in the books. In there. So this is one of the reasons why we have long queues, unresolved problems at labor centers, because people go there and they say the department is not giving us money. We can't give you money if you are still shown as registered. So these are some of the problems that cause long queues in these centers because of what's happening. Secondly, for the health and safety, I was shocked actually to discover that some of these farms, even the implements of working, you have to bring your own. Going to these grape farms, you have to bring your own shear and all of this. If you don't have that shear to cut out the grapes, you can't get a job there. So you would think that those are some of the basics that a farmer should provide. And then the issue of protective clothing, the term not known in the farms. People just work there in their normal, the regular clothes, no protective clothes, no clothing, no sanitation. We went there in a very hot, sunny day. It was so hot. There are no ablution facilities. Some people, the chairperson, trust me,
for drinking irrigation water in the farms. You see, this water is green, and people are drinking that water. It was very shocking. And then the last point, Chairperson, is the I can't see my own handwriting. Sectoral determination. What farmers do is that in the sectoral determination, we recommend minimum wage. So what we've discovered is that if you had a sectoral determination that was done, say, in 2004, that says this is the minimum wage, they hold that minimum wage forever. And then when they're supposed to do escalation, inflation, and whatever to improve in South Africa, they say, no, your government said we must pay you this much, so we can't pay you more. So they abuse that. So we're looking at how to make sure that that is not abused. So in a nutshell, Chairperson, I was really shocked. You know, it took me back to the 70s, what I experienced in the farming there. And then the issue of the board for Chairperson, I think the best, let me apologize that I didn't come back to the chair, but we dealt with the matter. What I undertake to do is to provide a full report of what happened, because we acted on the day, just that the reception in the home was not very good. I wanted to immediately respond, but Chairperson was either busy or was a poor reception. But we dealt with it on the day, but I will issue a full report. And then we'll also provide a report on the breakdown by province. Yes, the Chairperson is correct. We know that this committee requires detail. What we report here is a collation of the provinces, so that report is ready, because without that report, we can't come up with a national position. So that report is ready, so we'll do a breakdown. In fact, it is ready, and I thought we were going to bring it here. Is it here? Yeah, it's right here. So we knew that the Chairperson is passionate about the provinces, so we have that ready. Pilot project, why in Gauteng? There is no philosophical position, Chairperson. We note, we will look for opportunities to get that elsewhere again. Which companies were assisted, we will provide full detail on that. We also have that. The unit to assist workers, I think it's a very good proposal, Chairperson. We'll investigate how we do that. List of areas that 80% will provide that information as well. Just going through areas that have not been responded to quickly. Can you force companies to employ people? No, can't force them. But with like social dialogue, we have a good relationship with business in general. We use those environments. However, but when people have to lose jobs, there is a very clear mechanism and what laws should be followed to enforce the law so that people are not just victimized. Number of offices was the question here. What number of offices do we have? I think somebody can respond to that, but we have about 125 labor centers across the country. And in fact, just so that we also understand the point of presence, in the 172 labor centers, how many are we in? Tusong centers?
39.
In the 172 Tusong centers, we're in 39. Of those Tusong centers, and then in each province there is a point of presence, there is a provincial office in each province. Yeah, and then the last thing, Chairperson, the issue of the triple C contract, it's not technically correct to say the fruitless expenditure, but I think what is correct is to say the whole thing about triple P is very inefficient. I think, Chairperson, the decision was more a penny-wise, pound-foolish decision to go this route. We are learning from this. I mean, we're sitting here as a department without IT people. This is very, very, very risky for the department. How can a department so big not have IT people outsource the whole heartbeat of the operation? So going forward, these are some of the things that we want to reverse. To make sure that the department is fully compensated. I mean, if you look at the requirements of changing things very fast, you cannot be nimble if you have to depend on outside people. Just been to Germany on a study tour, even there,
they run these things internally. You can always ask for help here and there, but you can't take your whole tension and be pre-operated outside. Thank you, Chair. Allow if through you, Chair, then the CFO can do his part.
The structure of the presentation is as follows. Adjusted appropriation. Okay, let me just skip that one and go straight to the meet.
Just before the meet, Chairperson, just for the record, the breakdown of provinces is submitted to the office.
Chair, I think DG reported that we've got four programs here. Yes. For the department, we've got four programs, but there is an additional one, the social insurance one, which we normally lose sight of. This is just the insurance for the public servants who get injured on duty, but it excludes South African Police Services and South African National Defense Force. Are just the custodian of this insurance. Whenever public servants get injured on duty, they claim from this amount. So we just receive claims and we pay against this. Going forward, due to the reorganization of the state, the programs of the department have changed slightly. If we can compare slide 27 to slide 33, so that we can understand the way forward, where the names are going to change. We will no longer have employment and skills development services. Instead, we're going to have public employment services, and service delivery is going to change to we're going to fall away. We're going to have inspection and enforcement services. So going forward in presenting these figures, we are in a period of transition. Our programs are changing, so we'll have to take that in mind, or to bear that in mind. Slide 27, the initial appropriation was 2.126 billion, and there were some couple of changes, which I maybe need to take a second bite on the additional revenue, the question that was asked earlier, to say that the departments, many of them, are spending machinery of government. So additional revenue, whatever we get as an auxiliary revenue, we deposit it to the National Revenue Fund. If ever there is a need for us to keep that amount, we make a separate application to the National Treasury, and it comes as either a rollover, unforeseen and unavoidable, and it's added to our budget so that to keep track on our allocation throughout. So for the 2008-09, we have applied for a rollover, and an amount of 18.2 million was approved, therefore added to our budget. Also, we had an unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure that the Treasury gave us additional money for. That was the general salary adjustment. The initial budget was that we should increase our salary bill by 6%, but the government, with the DPSA, through their negotiation process, they ended up settling at 11.5. Therefore, our budget was falling short. As a result, we get a supplementary amount of 21.4 million to cover that shortfall. Then we had shifting within our main programs, which is, I think, it's self-explanatory. We just took money from admin and service delivery, and we gave it to the labor police and labor market programs. The 75.7 million was the Umsobopo Youth Fund allocation, which was in 2008-2009, allocation within the department, but it was transferred to Youth Development Agency. So we had to remove that allocation from our budget. In total, the adjusted appropriation ended up to be 2.090 billion rand for the 2009-10 financial year. The next slide. This is our outcome for the year, still unaudited. we are looking at that allocation of 2.090 allocation. We have spent 98.7% of our budget. We only, the amount that is left is only 1.3 against this, the acceptable unspent amount of 5%. So we are sitting well there. I think the reason why we have put these two slides together, because due to the reorganization of the state and the skills we have moving to the higher education, so our actual variance is sitting at 0.6% if you take the skills part out of our budget and you just look at the core business of the department. The transition that I need to mention here, that I mentioned earlier, was that this was to our programs in 2010, but in going forward, the structure has changed, as I've highlighted in the slide 33, wherein we have got different programs, and we had to revise our budget as if that change happened earlier to allow for the historical checking of the amount. So the next slide, which also talks about the spending pressures against our allocation, we have to via the following amounts to the institutions that are mentioned here. We have given this CCMA 62 million because of their pressure that they face in terms of the caseload. Also, we gave sheltered employment factories 17.9 million and 5 million to NEDLAC from our budget. This is our variance in terms of the economic classification, which I think is explained, the variance that we have are explained in the next slide. In the current payment, the reasons for the variance was the slow filling of the vacancies, which led to some savings, because it takes some time for us to fill the vacancies. So every month that it passes by, it gives us some saving for not having paid the salary for that particular vacancy. The other challenge that we have is the Department of Public Works, wherein we procure our buildings. They take time to invoice us in some cases, and also in some, they take time to invoice us, but what the challenge also that we have is that there is an under budgeting in this particular area. The amount that we are given by the National Treasury on our leases is far less than what we have far less than the leases that we have now signed. So we are working on with the Treasury to correct that particular line item. The transfers and subsidies claimed for, social insurance, that is not in our hands. We just wait for the claims from the other departments to be processed for us to spend that particular allocation. Then the other one is the severance packages that are taken by officials. Also, it's difficult to budget for this one. If the public servants want to take the severance package, they just make the necessary application and they don't indicate beforehand that they intend to do to take a package from government. As a result, this one is as we go along, this is how we encounter it. Then the capital payments is the challenge that we have on our capital project. In some towns where we can't get the building to rent or to lease, we have identified some sites where we need to build offices, and we are liaising with the public works to build those offices. I think their processes are too slow. As a result, we have the funds to pay for the building of the offices, but the actual building takes time. As a result, from year to year, we need to roll over those months because they've been earmarked. for a particular project. Also, maybe to highlight that due to the transfer of skills, the proclamation was in November, and since then we struggled to spend the budget that was allocated to that program. However, we've got the indication from Treasury that this amount is going to be rolled over to the higher department, to the Department of Higher Education and Training as their startup capital. So that is why we need to exclude this from our unspent amount, because it's going to be a blanket rollover. Going forward, just to touch on the indicative appropriations from 2010-11 to 2012-13. From 2010-11, our appropriation is indicated as being 1.783 billion. 11-12, 1.866 billion. And 12-13 financial year is going to be 1.942. I think that is all from the financial
side. Chairperson, can I just close by saying on the numbers, obviously going forward, we are going to relook into the projections going forward. This is just a very mechanical way of projecting forward the government process of doing things. But clearly, we are going to go into some work and revise and fine-tune things. And so these numbers are definitely going to change going forward. Now, in terms of the challenges, the chairperson, I won't read everything, but just at a high level, just to say indeed, we face serious challenges in the labor market. Of course, a lot of people that are quite aware of the challenges. It's quite a daunting task that requires an interdepartmental strategy. We're actually saying that the current approach that government is taking in terms of the outcomes-based approach and amalgamating a whole range of departments, that is going to provide a holistic response to the challenge. Now, Chairperson, it's all listed here. I think really the best right now is to go to the last slide. The last slide talks to the assistance withdrawn by the select committee. If one looks at that slide, Chairperson, first point there, on that last slide. The first point talks to input. That's not the last slide. Yeah. That's the input on how the door can improve service delivery, particularly in the province. So Chairperson, we really want to say is that department here would welcome input from this committee. Already, the committee has already suggested the issue of a unit to assist workers and so on. So we're noting that. But if there's more, our ears are open. And the issue of ensuring parliamentary constituency offices, liaise, and form partnerships with the department, so that we don't depend too much on the fact that when the chairperson and their committee are doing their roving their work, that we just pick up the popo here and so on, should be constant. There are various parliamentary offices. If they could constantly tell us the issues, we'll respond to that. Maybe they can use the chair as a scanning if they don't see action. But I think a lot of what should happen at that level. And the department encourages site visits to its development projects in various provinces. And we have a whole lot of things. We don't talk about all of them. Some of them are at a level we should call them flagship. Some of them are just normal projects. But if we are aware of what is the program of the select committee, we can try and make sure that part of the program includes those areas as well. Regular feedback from the committee regarding service delivery issues. That's one. And lastly, Chairperson, because we keep changing ourselves as a department, we've now adopted this new format that we spoke about, that is international benchmark. At some point, we'd like the opportunity to present to the committee. committee, who we are, and how the new structure is going to help, etc. So that's it. We're all on the same page about how the department is structured. So we'd like an opportunity to introduce ourselves much more detail. Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think in the interest of time, I haven't read everything. That's what that's it. We can move in at some point, Chairperson, if we're going to have other questions. I think my members have been indicating a 5-minute comfort break, if possible. Thank you, Chair.
I think there's a blanket rollover to the Department of Higher Education, 15 million. And we could understand in terms of the explanation that you might have an rollover in under your administration for saving on vacancies. But I can't understand your rollover on service delivery. Although you indicated that your service level is going to be substituted by law enforcement and is that a point to our reason, especially in enforcement service?
Okay,
another paper. Yeah, thank you.
We've got other meetings.
Yeah, Chair, let me also apologize for coming late. I missed a lot. I wanted to ask a lot of questions, but that has been denied by my late coming. But on the issue of assistance by the select committee, I just want to inquire, how do your department assist vulnerable workers like farm workers and domestic workers? From the area where I come from, I'm from the Free State, there's a lot of eviction. And I don't know what is the role of the Department of Labor. Because we cannot work in silos as departments. If we have a problem, we need to work hand in hand with other departments to resolve those problems. We cannot say, no, this belongs to another department. We can't assist. So I think it is important that we deal with it. That's it.
Okay, I think this is the last one.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is all on site visit. If we can get your problems from the department, where the department goes to different farms. If we can have that program, and I think I am saying this for the second time, to say we can't go all of us as a committee, but for that program, our members we can accompany in their different provinces.
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you want to pick up the rollover?
In terms of the rollover, unfortunately, we prepared this for this presentation just before we close our books. We still have to balance these line items. If you look at slide number 28, if the service delivery shows the variance of 30.7 million, but all in all, we're going to be left with only 10.5 million for all the programs. So we are at the stage where we are balancing the line items. The amount will definitely change. It's not just, this one is not the final one. It was just at the time when we are preparing the presentation.
Okay. And then the issue of farm workers, stand Lamad.
I think it's linking up with the commitment that we wanted to make in terms of working with the Department of Agriculture. And that's the issue of the eviction in the farm.
Okay. And then, Chairperson, I think then in closing, that's maybe just also close on the rollover issues. Also, the issue is that department, when we did the separation in terms of the program mission, setting staff members had to move to the department. So some of the budget is really staff related. So it must roll over because if it doesn't, those people aren't getting paid. So that's what the issue is. Some workers has already been responded to. But if we that's why I've got points of presence everywhere. If there are certain issues like these where people are evicted and domestic workers are not treated and so on, we're really asking that let us be informed and so that we can collaborate with other departments. So, and provincial programs will circulate, including the police operations. Thank you.
I wanted to ask
that
question that I have. If I don't ask it, then I'll die.
Oh, okay.
and even last time, because I want this department to be an example of other departments with the gender focal point, the fully fledged one, fully fledged gender focal point,
okay.
And with programs that will make upgrade. Workers, even the tea maker or the cleaner, programs that will at least make people to go up, not just going to pension, but still being a. A messenger, yeah, so there must be programs. So that gender focal point. Must be a fully fledged one. And when I stand in the podium debating, then I'll make an example about this department.
Thank you. We take the challenge. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let me take this opportunity to thank the DG and his team for the information they have. And I think everything has been sorted down. So that when you come here for the annual report, when you respond, I don't even think we have to ask questions when you come. We want you to give us what you have done and if you haven't done so, when will you do that and what was. We don't have to, we mustn't. Since 1994, we've been sitting and doing what we've been. Today, this is that we've changed. So now, we haven't come out. We are sleeping whilst we are walking. So let's change our actions. The turnaround, what? Strategy. Thank you very much. And. Unfortunately, we didn't plan for lunch because we started late at 10. So the budget, but next time the department also, because we can arrange for lunch.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. We always enjoy this committee because we feel the agency and the positive spirit of this committee. We always go back, build, and what is the interaction. Thank you very much for your contribution.
Thank you. We don't own. This is ours.
We just
gave a steel antique laptop.
Yeah,
exactly. No, you didn't give us code. No. I was right here. You brought. No. These codes, they belong to us.
These
codes belong to us. They were here. You just brought this thing. You gave us this thing. This is the only thing you gave us. This, including the extension underneath. I'm the one who came to you. We were standing here. I said, no, we connected myself and that gentleman because we're using this. Coming from our thing.